This week on Dig Me Out.
Well, there's a million destinations from the crossroad that we bring, and there's a satellite still humming in the atmosphere. And there's a girl who thinks that everything is cool with me. Burn down the banks, let's run.
With your hosts, Jason Zia and Tim Minichi.
Jay, we're back again with another episode thanks to our Dig Me Out Union on Patreon. You can help us make the next episode happen by joining us at dmounion.com or digmeoutunion.com. Speaking of the union, Jay, I have to come up with a new way to say that because I say the same thing every time. Speaking of the union, Jay, I have to referencing the union, Jay. Yes. We have a union member
Timothy.
Joining us, Jason. He has joined us previously. His suggestions for the past 3 years that he has brought to us. Mm-hmm. 2021. We have not been doing this for 23 years. That would be insane. We've only been doing it for 14 years.
We've only been doing it for 21 years.
Yeah. 2021, Maximum Sincere by Big Heavy Stuff. 2022, On Second Thought by Sandpit. And 2023, Open Up and Croon by Glide. All records that I believe when we learned what we were going to be reviewing went, I don't know what that is.
But I think we liked them all.
I think we did too.
I think you have a pretty solid record here, Josh.
I think the batting average is
very, very obscure things and converting us.
Mm-hmm. So let's see if the streak continues. Josh Page, welcome back to the podcast. Tell everyone the album that you have selected for this episode.
After much debate again, I have picked a Brisbane, Australia band called Pollen and their album, The Glorious Couch Life. It did cause a lot of pain once again. My children are particularly enjoying my suffering of whether I'm going to get a four out of four batting average. They don't think I am, so that's their pick this time.
Oh.
They think I'm going to get a better EP, and here he is, wanting to see.
Are you running odds? Like, is it 2-1 that he's going to get? What if we put money down? What are the odds here
is it a 50-50 chance?
I thought all the other times Dad seemed fairly confident with what he picked.
Yeah,
but not. Not so much this time.
So you were basing it on his confidence level.
More of a 50-50 chance.
Okay. Okay. So it might be a split between me and Jay, or it might be more in the middle. I guess we'll have to listen to each other's feedback about this record to determine what it will be. Well, you haven't said what it is, so what's... Or no, did.
Brisbane,
you did Pollen.
Brisbane, Australia band Pollen, The Glorious Couch Life from 1980.
There we go. That's what it is.
Yes.
Of course, Jay and I were completely flummoxed. Not only because we hadn't heard of the band, but when you search Pollen, it's not exactly easy to come up with this band. Luckily, this album is on Bandcamp and it's free.
Yes.
So anybody who's listening to this, you're not going to find it anywhere. As far as streaming, well, you can go to Bandcamp, and the band has actually a number of releases that go back, I guess, into the 90s. And then as recently as, I want to say 2016 is the most recent releases for this band. So what's your history with this band? Did you discover them when they came out? Was it later?
No, very much. When I was living in Sydney, I definitely discovered them just in my time living in Sydney and getting into that indie rock scene. So I loved the album. And then, they literally did an EP or two before the album, did the album. I thought it was a one and done album. And then I discovered it on Bandcamp for free, even though I already had it, obviously. And then I discovered that from about 2011 or 12, they then started releasing more albums. They had a little 15-year break and then they released about 4 or 5 albums on Bandcamp. And they're living in Finland, Helsinki, Finland. So, that was all for me. I found that all out through Bandcamp. So
I believe getting in a little bit of the history and what's going on with this band, the two guys that are in Finland are Cam Allen and Steve Langen or Langen.
Yes.
And then the other two members are Chris Broughton and Lisa Anderson.
Yeah.
And then as far as on this record, like who's playing whatnot, I don't know. Do you know who's like, even on the Discogs, like it doesn't break down who played what.
Oh, I know Cam Allen's the man, the main, he's the songwriter and the singer guitarist. So
okay.
He's definitely the main guy. And obviously I think Steve, who's gone to Finland as well. I don't know if he was the second guitarist or the drummer. I've got no idea myself either. So obviously they were a half of the band and they've continued going on since moving to Finland, but the other two didn't go across. And I know Greg Wales, who produced my second one, Sand Pit, on second thought, I think he produces the album, and he's also recorded some stuff with Cam Allen as well. Under a band titled Milepost, which is a really good album actually on Bandcamp as well. So pretty sure Greg Wales was involved with this album.
Yep, he produced it. As you mentioned, he produced the Sandpit album. He produced UMI, and he's produced Radio Birdman. So he's got some Australian cred with the records that he's produced. As mentioned, this came out in the 90s, February 15th, 1998, to be exact. And unfortunately, we don't know like anything about sales numbers or singles or anything like that. If that even happened, because this was on a fairly small label. It was on Brass, Companion, which doesn't have a huge discography.
No. I believe they got a little bit of Triple J, our national youth radio. They maybe got a tiny bit of Triple J airplay with probably one of the first two tracks off the album, I would imagine. And then, it was very much just, I would imagine they probably did a bit of touring with the likes of Scream Feeder and other Brisbane bands like that. So, very, very much a small release that didn't get a lot of publicity.
Yeah, the label was only around for 2 years and only put out like 10 releases. So it definitely like a local label as opposed to maybe something national.
Yeah.
We did get some comments over at Patreon. It's where our patrons hang out and discuss the records, as well as on our Discord. Gavin, fellow Australian, he said, "I've never heard of these guys." You stumped Gavin. Way to go. He said, "I thought I knew a different band of the same name. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. I heard some Scream Feeder harmonies and a bit of Beck. Worthy album." Ooh. Okay. On the other end, Ian McIver: "At least the songs are short. This album did not click with me. In a return to form, decent single." So Ian's streak of better EPs, I think, ends at like 2, unfortunately. But that's okay. We're always, you know, every week it's a completely new record. And sometimes there's two things happening in the same week. Like we just had an interview that Chip did. He's done 2 so far this year for us. Both in like the shoegaze dream pop world, with Riverside and Majesty Crush. So it seems to be appropriate considering the resurgence of shoegaze and dream pop in the indie rock world over the last couple of years.
Right.
Let's get into this record, Jay, since there's not a lot of history to talk about. Tell me what you liked about The Glorious Couch Life by Pollen.
The band has this really cool laid back kind of energy. There's this relaxed kind of delivery to the vocal that I think drives some of that. But then it also has just the right amount of edge. So it's just living in this really interesting place. The closest band I could come up with was like maybe early Death Cab for Cutie was where I was sort of like getting a vibe from. And I think what works so well about it, you know, kind of in that type of sound, is they do a really, I think, unique job of intertwining the lead guitar and the vocal, I think, in the songs that work really well, to the point where you can't separate the two. You couldn't pull one out and have the song be as strong. They're so important to each other. And the reason they're able to do that is because the bass is so, like, sonically and also from a performance standpoint, it's just, it's very present. It's got a little grit on it. It's very full. And it allows the guitars to really get up into this. They don't have to always play chords. Like, they can get up into this kind of vocal frequency and really almost be like this duet with the main vocal, which I think is really cool and not really like any other band. I mean, on the surface, you can hear other bands, but I think when I started to really pay attention to what they were doing, I couldn't really come up with an exact, you know, comparison, just in the way they're using that technique. I think the songs that showcase that best are Not Rocket Science, In Sea of Flames, Walruses to Whales, Sights High, and Sin as Fast as You Can. I was really taken by what was going on there with the interplay and also how they're playing with the bass and the tones used. And there's a lot of really cool effects on those guitars to the point where, like, some of them barely sound like guitars. I mean, some of them are straight up, you know, really nice clean tones, but they also get effect heavy with some phasing and, like, wobbles and tremolos and stuff that just give it this really interesting sound. And I think this dynamic of, I mean, you're not quite sure where the songs are going to go. And usually I say that about music that's maybe on the longer side, you know, in terms of unpredictability, but these are pretty concise songs. So I think that's the other thing that kind of makes it interesting is that, you know, within a 2 or 3 minute long song, the way that they're constructing the dynamics with the instruments and the vocal kind of working together, I was always pleasantly surprised, you know, when we would take a left turn here or there or evolve in a way that wasn't always predictable. There's also two moments on here where they take a left turn into a different sound that I think works really well. And that's on Million Destinations and Brighter Day. They go more into this, I don't know, like garage rock, British Invasion rock sound, maybe a little Guided by Voices-ish. It's more pop oriented. It's still layered and has all those things I talked about. This vocal delivery is very similar, but there's a brighter energy to it. It's a little bit more, like I said, like, you know, straightforward in the way that songs are written. But it's a nice little switch from some of the songs that are, you know, a little heavier, maybe mid-tempo. It's kind of cool to have, you know, a couple songs in there where they're just these bursts of kind of melody and more straightforward songwriting. So I think those left turns worked well too, in a way that they don't sound, they're a nice change, but not so far that it's out of character for the rest of the record. So what worked for you, Tim?
Well, I'm going to only agree with Gavin on one thing. I like that this is a short record because these songs have a lot of punch. When they hit, they're great little indie rock chunks. Like you mentioned with Guided by Voices, sometimes Guided by Voices songs are 30 seconds. They're not quite that short, but everything here is like 2 to 3 minutes essentially. I was getting, you know, a lot of different vibes from this record. There's stuff that reminded me of like the Chapel Hill sound of like Superchunk. Not the really earlier stuff when it's like kind of lo-fi, but as they matured and improved their sound quality, a song like Settle the Score on the Dance Floor, although I don't think that Mac would write those lyrics, it just the vibe of that song kind of had a Superchunk feel. I also got some like Lou Barlow vibes from some of the lyrics, the guy from Sebado. They're just there's a lot of smart lyrics happening, catchy things that are happening in the vocals. Sin as fast as you can, like that kind of stuff. It's just like it's a little bit smarter than just writing songs that are about your ex-girlfriend or, you know, a bad day at work or something like that. Like there's a lot of really interesting lyrical choices that are happening throughout this record. And this band would have like fit in really well with like 95 Boston, you know, Sebado's putting out Bake Sale, Dinosaur Jr., Buffalo Tom. There's you mentioned Brighter Day. That actually had parts of the vocals reminding me of the Breeders more so than Guided by Voices. I didn't really expect that, but there was something musically to that song that reminded me of, you know, like Divine Hammer or something by the Breeders, where it's not as aggressive and noisy as people know with like Cannonball. That song's a little bit more streamlined and a little bit more just sort of melodic, I guess. But then I do like on a song like No Rocket Science, it has that really weird high-pitched lead guitar part. I don't know if they're using, is that like a phaser or some sort of a frequency analyzer, not analyzer, but frequency modulator or something like that. Not, you don't hear a lot of bands use that because it is so out front. Like you can't hide that noise when you're writing a song like that.
So that's a great example though of what I'm talking about. Like what I like is that it's a bold guitar part, but it works really well with the vocal. And that's hard to do. It's hard to get those two things to work together and not compete and become confusing to the listener.
And kudos to Greg Wales, because I mean, the songs sound good. Like you mentioned, like there are songs that have like a garagey feel. They're a little fuzzier. There's always an energy happening to the songs. Even the slower songs still like push a little bit, which is, they're not like sort of sappy acoustic, you know, singer-songwriter-y songs. They still have a little bit of a drive to them. And that reminded me of like a Modest Mouse. Like Modest Mouse often plays in a slow tempo, but comes up with a lot of really interesting things to happen.
Yep.
So that's some of the stuff that worked for me. Josh, you brought this to us. What works for you on this record?
Yeah, I mean, everything you guys have said. I love the guitars. I love when you were saying early Death Cab for Cutie, Jay, that sort of made me think, oh yeah, because I'm a Death Cab fan, particularly of the earlier stuff. As everyone says, I like their old stuff better than their new stuff. And it does that sort of peppy sort of energy, but it's got that sort of relaxed. That's why I think I name check Superchunk and Pavement, but Pavement more for that relaxed vocal delivery, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Like sort of just cruisy. But his lyrics are sort of slyly funny as well. You can get a chuckle out of some of the lyrics, even as you said, Tim, like a song title, like Sin as Fast as You Can. It's just, you can just get a little bit of a laugh just thinking of the song title straight away. So I just find it's quite clever. I like his vocal delivery. It's relatively unique. I think that you can sort of hear that he's Australian in his vocal delivery for me. I like that. And I just like, yeah, I love the guitars. I love the sequence of the album. It really starts off with the 1-2 punch that's pretty peppy with the first two songs, a lot of energy. But then some of the slower songs, as you said, like I really love track 3, Into the Sea of Flames, and then Walruses to Whales, those two songs in particular that are a bit slower, but they still do have that sort of drive, if you will, or just the guitars really help the songs come along. And then it's got some really bright stuff at the end as well, like Sin as Fast as You Can and Brighter Day and Sight's Eye, but Brighter Day and Sin as Fast as You Can. Yeah, so I just found it was my dad went over to New Orleans for work, I remember, in the mid-90s, and I wrote a list of bands that I wanted him to get CDs for me, and it was literally like Pavement, Guided by Voices, Superchunk, and it was nearly like, I was like, oh, this band that I've never heard of in 1998 from Australia has released this album that I think sort of stands up with a lot of the cool stuff that I discovered in the mid-90s when I was getting into indie rock. So, yeah, I just thought it was a fantastic Australian representation. It's not just a rip-off, it's their own version.
Yeah.
But it's,
I want to correct myself. Greater Than was the one that I thought had a Superchunk feel. Settle This Score on the Dance Floor definitely has the Beck sound that Gavin brought up. Like, that sounds like a Beck song that should have happened that never did.
Yes. Yeah.
10 centerfolds in a corset, 10 painters in a storm, and all the cats are gathering, and everything's well worn. We tried to get along, but there was still remorse. Those enigmatic centerfolds threw me off my course, but then I settled in, I stopped my guessing. Cameras clicked again, but everything was missing. Rollercoaster love, rollercoaster cure. I tried to stay pure, but I'm not that cool. Get down. Settle a score on the dance floor. Get down. Settle a score on the dance floor.
Great. And I love it. It's a little cheeky. Like, it's fun, but it's not stupid. Like, it's not a, you know, Bloodhound Gang song. It's it just sounds like fun. I could imagine like Dismemberment Plan having a song called Settle the Score on the Dance Floor or something like that. Yeah. Like, so I just wanted to correct that. So, because people probably heard when I said that earlier and they're like, that doesn't sound like Superchunk.
No, when you said it, I was like, man, I didn't hear that.
No. Jay, is there anything that doesn't work for you on the record?
There's a couple missteps. I'm on the other side of Settle the Score on the Dance Floor. It felt out of character for this band. It's a very stilted feel. It's kind of robotic sounding. I think the lyric is a little novelty to me.
That's how you get the hit.
I know. Well, you know what? That's exactly what I thought. I thought in America, this totally would have been a hit. It reminded me of, I can hear, who did you say? Oh, Beck. I can hear that. I can also hear Cake.
Yep.
Or a band like that. But that's, in the late 90s in American radio, that's the type of song that was getting played, unfortunately, because I think it's one of the weaker ones on the record, just from it doesn't fit the tone. I don't like where it's placed. There's a couple songs too. There's an instrumental that I like. I just don't think it needs to be 3.5 minutes long.
Special Features?
Yeah.
Is that the one? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool sound, but it doesn't really go anywhere. And it feels like more of that should have been the interlude on the album and maybe take 800 million light years off completely, because that is just kind of noise. Instead, you know, do a shorter version of Special Features. I don't love how the album ends. It ends on a couple tracks that Mining Hands and Soma and the Nerves of Steel, where the vocal comes forward and the guitars back off, and it gets a little less dynamic to me.
Mm-hmm.
I started thinking of bands like Soul Coughing, or it dragged a little bit more. Parts of it felt a little like almost funky, or I don't know, just going in places that didn't work as well as the rest of the album. I missed, you know, those cool dynamics between the guitar and the vocal that are present in the other songs, and that just felt a little more straightforward and not as interesting. So there's a couple misses. It's not a perfect album. She's got soma and nerves of steel. She's got soma and nerves of steel. Got drunk in half the time. Seems so simple. The time we set was over this. Racing on the wrong. Another quiet guy. Queen temptation. That's what did more for me. Anything for you, Tim?
Yeah, I completely agree with you about the end of the record. It turns into like a granddaddy record at the end. It's like this kind of lo-fi-ish, chill kind of thing. And to me, I like it when they're mid to up-tempo, when they have energy, when there's personality. And ending with those two just sort of, it just peters out basically at the end. And again, we have an album with a hidden track thing going on there.
You can call it that.
You can call it that, exactly. But I looked at it and go, 8.5 minutes. Uh-oh, what's going on at the end here? But yeah, I just think that's not their strongest material. And also, it's in comparison to what they did so well. Like you said, you start this record out, it's just like boom, boom, boom. Really cool things are happening. And then it ends and it just sort of like falls asleep at the end. So if you're going to have, I don't think you probably need both of those songs on the record. You probably want to move them around somewhere if you're going to keep one of them. And I agree with you, special features should be like, you know, 90 seconds at the most, maybe like 60 seconds. It's cool. I like the what's going on there. And I mean, that organ sound is pretty awesome. I kind of wish they had incorporated that into an actual song with vocals and stuff, but yep. I can understand why that would be hard. I mean, it sounds like it would be on like a 70s episode of a Solid Gold or something. Like it's it's like what's happening here? This did my record change? It's really those little nitpicks. Like I don't think any of the songs up till then, between Million Destinations and Brighter Day, are any of them really lack anything other than 800 million light years. That's probably one you could lose. But for the most part, they keep the quality throughout. So Josh, is there anything over either that you didn't like before when you got the record, or now that maybe doesn't work for you, things that have come up?
100%. I would probably keep Soma and Nerves of Steel, obviously not the 1 second special feature at the end for 8 minutes, and just put it midway through the album maybe, and sort of try and end on a higher note. I mean, I wouldn't even mind ending on Sin as Fast as You Can and putting Soma in the middle somewhere, and then get rid of 800 million light years. So I agree. I reckon it could be like 11 tracks and it'd be a great little 30 minute sort of album. So, but yeah, that's my nitpick as well. Like it just, those last two tracks are just a bit like, oh, why did you do that?
It is interesting that this did not come out in the US. I mean, I guess it was because of the, you know, it's on a very small label, but they did have Greg Wales who had some cachet. Yeah. You know, he had done some bands that like with UMI who did get releases in the US. Like this seems like it would have fit in college radio in the US. Yeah. I know it's 98, yeah. But still like this was still getting played like jangly or garagey or, you know, bands that could come up with a hook were still getting played on college radio at that time. It's a shame that people didn't get to hear this because it is a pretty cool record.
And it fits with like the Saddle Creek stuff that was going on and yeah. Some of the indie stuff that was starting to break at that time in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. And like Merge Records and mm-hmm. like, I'm surprised that they didn't strike a deal with Merge or Matador or one of those labels. Cause it seems like it would just be perfect for them.
What was Death Cab on Barsuk?
Yeah. Originally yeah. They were on Barsuk.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how big that label actually was. Or mm-hmm. if it even still exists, but I don't think it was too huge. But yeah, that's exactly a good comparison.
That like, stuff was, you know, those bands were starting careers, you know, they were touring a lot and selling records and some of them were on very small labels in yeah. the late 90s, early 2000s.
Looks like Barsuk is still active. They have a lot of releases. I did not realize they had over 500 releases. That's crazy. Yeah. And they started out like, I'm going to guess with just a small, you know, Death Cab was one of their earliest releases.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably helped fund future, you know, signings. And because they got the first album, Something About Airplanes. They also got We Have the Facts and We're Voting Yes. And they also signed John Vanderslice, who at the beginning of the 2000s was kind of a name, and he ran yep. his own recording studio. And they released the photo album from Death Cab. So that's a pretty good catalog to have.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder
not
if
a surf. Label. I forgot about that.
Yep. Oh. I wonder if a label like that, it becomes difficult to break an Australian band just from a, you know, you have to tour a lot. I don't know.
Right.
Financially what that looks like to bring a band over from Australia and really put in the amount of time and money invested to really just doing a couple of years of solid touring around the US in that time period.
And I imagine every band member would have had, if not full-time, part-time jobs in Australia.
Right.
Yep.
Well, and we just talked about another Australian band for our exclusive Patreon episode in the 2000s, Violent Soho. And in order to try to make it, they moved to the United States for 18 months. And you know, buckled down on the touring and just toured, didn't have jobs. You know, they lived off of their tour money and whatever Thurston Moore was able to fund through the label that he had. And that's kind of the way you have to do it. I mean, if you're going to make it, yeah. You kind of have to just go all in. I didn't realize that Death Cab was with Barsuk like a long time. I thought it was just the first couple albums, but they released like all the way up to Narrow Stairs on Barsuk. But that was probably the vinyl. And then Atlantic put out the CD, I'm guessing. Or they got some sort of maybe they sold Death Cab to Atlantic or made a part, some sort of yeah. deal where, but I did not
realize.
I wouldn't
be surprised if that band is responsible for a lot of what the label's been able to do.
Yeah. Cause I recognize a lot of these artists like Rah Rah Riot and Jesse Sykes and who else is on here? Mates of State, that was a band that was like
yeah.
kind of a big thing for a while. Chris Walla put out his solo records on there. David Bazan from Page of the Lion put out his solo records on there. So, you know, they kept it small. Rilo Kiley put out records on Bar Sucks. So they kind of kept it like reasonable, I guess. They didn't sign like huge bands.
It looks like Plans is the first album that was released on Atlantic.
Interesting.
So that's pretty, that's up, you know, 2005. So up until that point, it's, those are all Bar Sucks exclusives.
Yeah. So it's not too bad.
Yep.
Let's talk about our final overall ratings for this record. I mean, looking at it, what we've said, I think I know, but we'll share the poll results of Worthy Album, Better EP, Decent Single in just a moment. But Jay, do you want to go ahead and share your results? I know your kid's watching this with very, very...
He might have to be the tiebreaker.
Uh-huh.
His fingers are crossed.
I'm going with a Worthy Album. I really like the sound of this band. I think it's a great sounding album. I just like the unique energy. I know we mentioned a couple bands here that made us think of, but you know, there's not a ton of comparisons you know, it still feels unique to me. There's some guitar ideas on here. I was still writing more, I would be sealing. You know, there's some left turns that are missteps that I called out, but they're not terrible, you know, in terms of like skipping or like can't listen to them. I just think there's some weak spots. So I'm comfortable with a Worthy Album. What's it going to be, Tim?
You know, I think I'm there with you, because I wouldn't cut, you know, 800 million light years, you know, take it or leave it. Honestly, I would take everything up to Brighter Day. You can get rid of that one track. And then I would add Sin as Fast as You Can. And I would make special features like the hidden track. So I'd have a 10 track album with that little thing tacked on. I think it works then as like your little bonus track and not as like a main track. Or if you're thinking in terms of a vinyl record, have the instrumentals like end each side. Maybe that's what you do. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a Worthy record, and I it's too bad that this is not on streaming, because I think more people should check this out, because it kind of touches on a little bit of each band, but it's kind of its own thing.
Yeah,
and that's pretty hard to do with, you know, a rock and roll band when there were a billion rock and roll bands at this time. So Josh,
thank you again. Appreciate it. I feel like I might be getting sympathy. but the more you've been talking about it, I nearly think what I love about it too is that imperfection, how it's not like, for me, when I gave you Big Heavy Stuff and Sandpit, I'm like, there's nothing I would change about those albums. But this one, it's like, it's great, but it's not perfect. But it's still, the missteps are just that. They're not, you can tell they're just trying to either have some fun or do something a little bit different. And mm-hmm. even though it doesn't work wholly for me, it's literally only two tracks or so so that's why I think it's a Worthy Album too, because it's definitely 10 or 11 really, really strong tracks. So, yep, and I love its uniqueness, even though you can name check lots of different bands. As Jay said, they don't sound exactly like any of those bands. There's just elements of all of them, and the songwriting's strong enough to make you go, oh, this is just cool in and of itself. So, yeah, I thought it was a great little gem that not many people, even in Australia, had heard of. So
it's true, and it's nice when you can. I mean, I'm not standing around introducing people to music like we would be in a bar talking about music with friends or whatever, and be like, "Oh, have you heard the new blah blah blah?" But you could easily say like, "Well, if you're into like Superchunk and Sabado and maybe, you know, Guided by Voices, you'd probably dig this record." Like, it doesn't sound anything. Doesn't sound exactly like any of those bands. And we've heard bands try to sound like Guided by Voices or try to sound like other bands and not really pull it off. This has just got the little bit of the DNA, but it's definitely its own thing. And our patrons agreed 67% worthy album, 33% decent single. Ian.
At least it split people's opinion.
It did. Yeah, people see, either liked it or did not like it, which is, yes, you know.
It's not sympathy.
No.
People are agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You've got the streak going. This is there's a lot of pressure on the next one.
I reckon I've got about 4 good years left in me.
No. You're going to be around a lot longer.
Based on my Facebook group, that pollen was definitely not the top one. So I know Gavin wants to do one that I had on my list, so he might get that out before me.
Oh, do you guys talk away from the podcast?
On a Facebook group, he's part of that, and he just said, I sent out a little list of 4 bands, and pollen was one of them, saying, I can't pick out of these 4, give me some advice. And I would say pollen was probably the 3rd of the 4 that people suggested, and I just kept listening to the 4 albums for a couple of weeks, and I went, no, I really love this album, it's catchy as hell, and I remembered you guys always telling me about my slow to mid-tempo, so I thought I'd give you something a bit more up-tempo.
Well, we were worried that maybe, you know, there was some sort of depression or something like that. So we're glad that you've shaken out of that. And
right.
And I know it's been the last 4 years have been trying for everybody, but we're glad to see you've come out of it with some energy and some. And I like the fact that on some random Facebook page out there, there's people discussing what albums they're going to pick for the podcast, that our power extends well beyond. Just
into the metaverse.
It would be wild if there was like, I don't know, maybe there is, but if there was like a group of people who were like unofficially created like a Dig Me Out community that we know nothing about. And then we would just stumble and go, what's going on here?
They're peddling albums that they're trying to
implement. Yes. I also want to believe that there is some sort of betting scheme going on where people are betting whether we're going to do where the album, better EP, or decent single.
We'll get shut down.
Only my children.
Can we get that on FanDuel? Can we get the? I feel like we could get some money out of that. Like,
I know, in the US, Kings? You can pretty much bet on anything, right from your phone. So why not?
This episode's brought to you by FanDuel. Vote on our better EP, where the album, decent single, for each episode. No, because then we would start taking payoffs for things.
Oh my God. We just start making our picks and like sealing them in vaults beforehand so we can't cheat or something.
I think you guys could be gotten to.
Oh, I absolutely could. I'm not going to lie. Like, somebody's like, oh, that you can, I can get a Ford or less. Paul Goldtop, I'm definitely going to throw some votes the wrong way.
New John Mayer album. Yeah.
Oh, this Rooms for Squares is great. I've never heard John Mayer. I'm going to be honest. Other than that, Your Body's a Wonderland song.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't avoid that. Josh, thank you so much for another great pick. And enlightening us to another Australian band that we did not know. So
it's so all these picks are so unassuming too. I'm just like, pollen. I'm not sure what that's going to be. You know, you see the album cover. I'm like, I still don't know what this is going to be.
Right.
So well, there's also surprised.
There's 2 album covers. There's one for the CD and one for the vinyl. I didn't realize that, so I just picked the one for the vinyl. And there's actually the one that's behind me on the screen is the one for the CD, which I didn't know until I went to Discogs today. I was like, oh, I should have picked the CD one because that makes more sense for us. But they use the vinyl cover for Bandcamp.
Yes.
So it must be the one that they prefer. Because it has a couch on it. Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
I guess that makes sense. But if you try Googling pollen, you're not going to find them. So use the full album title.
Go to Bandcamp. On streaming, there are 14 bands called pollen.
I know. There's a lot of pollen bands.
All right. So I want to remind the folks, if you'd like to be like Josh, you can go to dmounion.com or digmeoutunion.com. To join our union, you can join our Discord from there, where we have discussions about all sorts of things. What were the topics this week, Jay? I was a little bit busy this week, so I didn't get to check in as much as I would have liked. I know you posted some UFO stuff, but I just ignore that because it's lunacy. However, I believe that I'm just joking with you. Oh, I know what it was. It was the news that John Davis is working on a new record. He's pretty much done with a new record. It was supposedly going to be the new Superchunk record, and then I guess
that makes sense. Yep.
Superdrag, not Superchunk. It was going to be the new Superdrag record. It didn't go that way, and it's being released under a different. I don't know if it'll be a Lees of Memory album or if it'll be under a completely different band name, considering the members are different. But
yep,
that was one of the things we were talking about this week. And you can do that by joining us at Patreon. Become a patron for the 90s rock podcast. You can also join for the 80s metal podcast, which is out every 2 weeks. We just released an episode on like a week ago on what was the one we just did? Hanoi Rocks.
And yeah, back to Helsinki.
And the, yeah, exactly. We got a big Helsinki thing going on here. And we've got some more this week. When this podcast drops, no, it won't be this week. Yeah, maybe might be this week. I don't know. To be honest, they just come out of the sky after we record them. But I think it might be this week that the next episode drops, based on my calculations. And you can join us at Substack. The Box newsletter is where you go to stay up to date on both podcasts. Also, it's where our weekly release calendar of new albums, books, movies, TV shows, documentaries, anything to do with 80s, 90s, and aughts music. Darius Rucker just released a new book talking about Hootie and the Blowfish. I know our community is very excited to reach the Darius Rucker book. Everybody should run out and grab that. And that's... We do reviews, we do band histories sent to your inbox via Substack. You can go to digmeoutpodcast.com to suggest records, which are voted on by our union, another benefit of our union. Also cool stickers that we send out. And then lastly, Apple Podcasts is where you go to leave positive feedback for the show. So for Jay, I'm Tim. We are out, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Dig Me Out. Jenny's got her-